Today on Talk About That, we finally break down the Volunteers' big win over Alabama. Then I bring back cigars and candy from Mexico with ominous warning labels. Meanwhile, we ponder Tennessee's new license plate options and wonder if it could lead to something nefarious. Also, a conversation about negativity in the media and whether we will ever escape this era of clickbait and doom scrolling. Today's episode is not sponsored by tacos. It's just like a burrito, except everything falls out of it while you eat it. Let's go.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Two men, one myth, one legend. It's Talk About That. I'm John here with Johnny.
Am I the myth or the...
Well, John, that's up to you to decide. How what you do with your own life will dictate.
When I think of myths, I think of like Greek mythology. Like I've got seven heads or something.
I don't know if that expression, though, when people use it, they don't usually refer to Greek things.
No. Just me, because I'm a nerd. I loved Greek mythology. Greek mythology, although, was always my Achilles hip. I felt that's stupid.
You know, I had a Johnny joke the other day that you've retired.
Oh, no.
I'm not
really
sure it ever made it into joke form. Mm. What was it? And I was like, oh, man, that would be good again.
If it was going to work, I probably tried it, and it did not work. Somebody said that the other day. They said they left a comment on the YouTube page. They were like, you missed a total opportunity here. Because it was the She song. She never heard the word impossible. Uh-huh. She ain't familiar with regret. She don't know the meaning of many words at all. She's stupid. And this guy watched the video, and I think he even liked it. And he said, oh, he missed a total opportunity here just to say she's illiterate. And I was like, yeah, I tried all that.
Yeah.
I tried like five different punchlines. But yeah. I think people don't understand that's how comedy works. Like, believe me, if illiterate got a bigger laugh, I'd be saying she's illiterate. Stupid was a way funnier, just like quick hit, boom.
Right.
It ends on a hard D, I guess, and it's just like that, boom. It's so quick.
Yeah.
But anyway, people don't know what they don't know. It's fine. And I please keep commenting, but it's that thing of, you know, I tried it all.
I always felt it was the harmony note that made that joke.
And who
on your
who sang the harmony note?
I don't remember. Do you remember? It was like you had this guest guy on your comedy special, and he came out and did one note on the word stupid.
Right.
Which is apropos considering how stupid he is.
Yeah. John, don't beat yourself up.
Oh my goodness.
Let me beat you up. Yeah.
You ever hear people like you talk about, you know, the man, the myth, the legend. It's used a lot in different phrases. I also hear people use infamous a lot these days.
Infamous.
But they say it sometimes about good things.
Oh, okay.
Like I always think of Three Amigos.
Right. He's infamous. El Guapo
right.
is infamous.
Is a,
it's bigger than famous.
Right. He's better than famous. And people kind of say it like that. Oh, it was an infamous play that, you know, won the national championship. Like, by the way, they were playing the Auburn-Alabama kick six the other day. It was still the craziest play.
That's the best.
109 yards.
You can't beat it.
But if you could beat it.
What?
If there was an infamous game.
The knuckleball through the uprights.
Did you think it was going to go through?
Here's the truth. I was watching it while driving on the road. So we watched the whole game in the hotel room, and we had tickets to see Martin Short, Steve Martin.
Oh, my gosh.
At this theater in Chattanooga. So we're like, we can't stay any longer. We have to get on the road. We're going to miss our $150 ticket show to watch the last part of this game. We have to go.
When Johnny and I are texting the entire game, every game of every Tennessee game, and you stopped. I knew you had that show. I was like, oh, man, he's going to miss this.
Well, and I was behind him watching on an app.
Ironically, what I also thought about the guy kicking the field goal.
And probably should have missed it. Man, that thing looked rough. But yeah, so I'm watching that, and I had to text you because you're texting me after every play, and I'm on the same time frame as you.
That's right.
But now I'm not because I'm on an app on my phone, so it's like 3, 4, 5 seconds behind. Yeah. And I'm like, do not text me if this kick goes through.
Do not say a word. Oh, dude.
I will kill you. And so we're watching it live. And what's funny is my wife is not, she's not annoyed. She's not as into the game as I was, obviously. She's just not. But she's into it. And then we started coming back, and then we had the you know, they scored on us because of a scoop and score. And it was a horrible play. And it's like, that's it. That's the one mistake we made. Yeah. You can't make mistakes when you play Alabama. And then we kept coming back. And then she was getting more into it. We're watching. And I said, hold my phone like this. Because I didn't want to, I want to look at the road. Mm-hmm. But I want to look at the phone too.
Wow.
And she's holding the phone. And when that kick went through, she started crying.
Really?
Yeah. Like, she was overtaken. Like, we stormed the field. Oh, and like, I flew over and she was crying. And then I started crying to watch her. I was crying at her. Yeah.
I thought I couldn't respect her anymore.
Yeah.
But somehow.
She was swept up in the moment.
It was emotional to watch those kids, the jubilation.
I hate the whole thing of, listen, Alabama fans, I love you. I don't know what it's like to, what must it be like to be an Alabama fan where every weekend is this.
Right.
But Alabama fans who are like, yeah, yeah, act like you've been there. You got to tear up your own field. Yeah, we do. We've not been very good for quite some time.
We've not been there.
We're not going to act like we've been there. You know, it's been 15 years.
I had dinner with an Alabama fan the other night, and he was talking about how he and his family were going to go to one of the national championship games. And he said, it just got to be too much. He goes, it's okay. We'll just go next year.
Right. Yeah, you just.
And he was like, and you're an Alabama fan. You can say that.
That's crazy.
And guess what? He went next year. The next year. I mean, and so.
That's insane. It's
hard. I mean, Tennessee is a storied program more than people give it credit for in this last 20 years.
Well, our fans have a bit of a chip on our shoulder. We won the first BCS championship in 98. And a lot of our fans, I think, thought, we're back. That's going to be every year. And so we do have some fans in our fan base who are knuckleheads, and they act very entitled to this.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's annoying on Twitter to have to defend them, because I love the Vols, but man, our fan base can be insane sometimes.
Every time Johnny defends me on Twitter, wait.
John, every time you light your couch on fire and you ask me to come put it out.
I'm like, guys, by the way, I am wearing, if you're not watching today, I'm wearing the smoky gray with the orange.
It's nice.
And it's a good combination.
I'm wearing red, and that's not to represent anything. I have the Titans, though, today, too. Hold on. Let me find that. Yeah.
I thought, and I texted you, and I hate to be so negative, and I know if you're not a football fan listener, don't worry. We'll get to other things.
Just hit the 30-second button.
Yeah. No, it's okay. It's okay.
Don't do that.
Because I'm about to bring in.
Oh, you're going to bring in some
Jeremiah,
spiritual truth?
Right, right,
oh,
in the
good.
Of this. Jeremiah 29. I'm just kidding. It's Ezekiel. The kick was like a flip within a wheel. You know what I'm saying?
It was.
Oh, my goodness. At any rate, like when he missed the extra point, I texted you and I said, that's it. We're going to lose by one.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was the thing. Because like, there's always one thing.
Yeah.
You know,
you can't make a mistake against Saban. He'll capitalize. Yeah.
And then, though, the whole fumble thing, like it was so bad that the running back didn't even know it happened. He thought that the quarterback, it was
he kept
option.
Blocking. He ran on.
He ran on thinking that, you know, the quarterback still had the ball. And, like, it just sat there like a gift.
How do you not know the ball has hit you and dropped to the ground? Do you have feeling in your torso? What's happening?
Well, I mean, the deal is, it's the quarterback's option to hold, to pull. He thought he pulled it back out.
It's his prerogative.
Come on, guys. And so I thought that's it. And they wouldn't go away. And this is the craziest stat. Now, you may not be a football fan, but this will mean something to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Jalen Hyatt, our receiver, who was our second best receiver, our best receiver still on the sidelines. He had to have an ankle surgery.
Right, Cedric Tillman.
Should be back hopefully by Kentucky, if not hopefully by Georgia. And literally, Jalen caught 6 passes.
Mm-hmm.
For 5 touchdowns.
Yeah.
I've never heard.
Yeah, it's insane.
I mean, I don't know. What is 5,
200
6?
Plus
is
yards.
90%?
Over 200 yards, 5 touchdowns.
On six receptions.
Receptions.
I mean, it's got to be a record.
We were throwing bombs.
Yeah, and they were like 70 yards,
and you go,
50 yards.
Listen, listener, if you don't know anything about college football that John and I grew up with is literally up the middle on 3rd down, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, Philip Fulmer. And then we had some great running backs that got us the national championship. But we do not have a fun and gun that we grew up with.
I will say.
We grew up with Peerless Price and those
T-Martin
guys.
T-Martin and Peerless Price was you know, they.
But they didn't throw 6 receptions for 5 touchdowns.
No.
These were not 80-yard bomb plays. It was like dink and dunk, and then he would break one. This guy was like throwing rainbows.
Against the best secondary, I don't know if they're the best secondary in the nation this year, but that's like Saban's
baby.
Well,
we exposed them, and that's what's going to hurt them,
Saban's baby is the secondary.
Man,
and
I don't know.
Hyatt looked like he was 10 yards past their defenders every time.
Yeah.
It was like they couldn't – the idea that he ran past the – you know, some of the best secondary players in the nation that many times. I mean, one time as sure is a busted play, but it was crazy.
So this is the magical – is this it? Is this our year?
You know, the season is oddly
Is this
enough,
where we trip up and lose to Vanderbilt or Kentucky?
Well,
we overlooked
Kentucky's
them?
Really good.
Yeah.
Kentucky's, what, number 16, I think?
I mean, we're not going to lose to UT Martin, but I'm saying – Georgia is you probably pencil in Georgia as a loss, and then you hope for a win. But we have more talent than Georgia probably this year.
I don't think we have more talent. I think that our
better coached.
I think our offense. Well, here's the thing. This is one of the first times I think I said this to you. It is so amazing, and I'm not besmirching old coaches.
How dare you besmirch?
I just mean like there have been times when it's 4th and 3,
mm-hmm.
and. I'm not confident that whoever's calling this play is going to do something creative enough that the other team hasn't seen it.
Yeah.
And sometimes we just think, we got to muscle this on through and run the guy up the middle, gain 1 yard, and turn the ball over on downs. On that 2-point conversion.
Yeah.
I mean.
The little shovel pass.
The shovel pass.
Yeah. It was like Kansas City Chiefs. I think Evan said that. My buddy Evan was like, that's like a Kansas City Chiefs play.
See, my only fear
that's
now.
That's Patrick Mahomes.
See, my only fear now, though, is that Georgia has now seen our entire playbook because we pulled out the stops.
You can't worry about that. But listen, can they stop it, though? You may know what I'm going to do, but can. Listen, you may know my jokes, but can you stop them?
I mean, you can.
Can you stop me from telling them?
I mean, you just
You can just not laugh.
Or put some duct tape around his mouth.
Please don't.
There's all.
Anyway, that's your 5 minutes of Vols, I guess.
I do think, to answer your question, that... Okay.
We're not done.
I don't think we're done.
No, I'm saying we're not done with the Vols. I'm just trying to figure out how many
exit.
People are driving their car into guardrails right now.
I think they're fine.
Okay, good.
I think that it's only halfway through the season.
Yeah.
I do think that they will... I think the fans have lost their minds, myself included.
Well, now the expectation goes crazy.
I don't think that the players will... I think Hendon Hooker, he's 24 years old.
Well, they're well coached. They're well coached. They know to focus.
And Josh Heupel's been here before.
Yeah.
He was a national championship football player who was second, very close runner up for the Heisman.
Yeah.
You know, so like he's going to, I don't know. I think that we'll be in every game. And here's the great news.
Well, they almost lost. That's the thing. You still have a lot of coaching that you can do on those players because they gave up 49 points.
Well, that's what they said. When they came in Sunday, the coaches, like, yeah. They ripped the players pretty good on all the places. They all celebrated, but like guys, if y'all think this was a
right,
you should have won by 21.
Yeah, we could have easily lost that game.
You can just tackle. Now we just have to say this: Bryce Young is another level. Without Bryce Young, we win by 21.
Oh yeah, he was crazy.
You couldn't.
He threw for 500 yards. Didn't
you couldn't
he? Almost 500.
Him.
Yeah,
and they were all on busted plays. Like we had him in the backfield, and they just get tired of running. He's just too.
Yeah, that guy's gonna be playing on Sundays, as they say.
Hopefully sooner rather than later. Who wins the Heisman and comes back besides Tebow? A guy. I mean, why would you not? Did Johnny Manziel play a second year after the Heisman?
Maybe.
I don't remember.
I don't know.
That you know they're comparing us a little bit to the LSU team. What 2019?
The Burrow team. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like a flash in the pan kind of thing, but I think it's a lot about the coaching and the system. But,
well, I mean, gosh, how many players went in the portal? I mean, this should have been a rebuilding year.
We were decimated.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, you know how many high-profile
recruits
were
there?
Mm-hmm. And a lot of them being recruited by both teams.
And they're in that environment. That's talk about a sales pitch.
Oh, my
Good
gosh.
Grief.
Yeah, even the basketball teams were using the weekend to their advantage. They had a bunch of recruits in. I watched the thing. That, Rick Barnes did an open practice. And so in Thompson Bowling. So they had a bunch of recruits there as well. It was crazy.
Man. I love it. Well, anyway, Vols fans out there. And listen, we know we have some Alabama fan listeners. And listen, you've had your day in the sun and it's over.
Yeah, like.
It is all Vols. No, I'm just kidding. We're probably going to.
And you know what I hope? Please do not let us meet Alabama again.
Oh, that's the thing. It could happen again. And then we got to.
It could happen in two places. It could happen in the SEC championship.
Or in the playoff.
Or in the playoff. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's likely. It's likely to me. If you beat Georgia, we're going to beat them again. We need now to pull for Ole Miss to beat Alabama and make them a two-loss team.
Yeah.
So.
And it could happen.
And then you meet Kiffin.
Oh, man.
Then in the SEC championship.
The golf ball game rematch.
If we go, if you were to go undefeated.
The mustard bottle game.
Because even if you lose that game, you probably still make the playoff, I'm guessing, if you're undefeated. You're
Please let
loss.
That bowl be sponsored by French's Mustard.
Did you see what Kiffin posted?
No.
You know, Saban had the meltdown on the sideline.
Yeah.
You know? He took the screenshot of that mm-hmm. and made a meme with a mustard bottle hitting him in the head while he's like leaning down. He's making this face. He's so angry. And it's a mustard bottle. I mean, Kiffin.
Kiffin, I mean, that guy's a next level troll. Mm-hmm. He really is. Like, he knows what he's doing.
But he's funny about
it. He's like
it.
A wrestling heel. Yeah. He knows how to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. It's like the wrestling heel would always show up to the town and whatever town it'd be like, oh, look, if it isn't Knoxville, Tennessee, y'all got some ugly women. And everybody would know that it's a trick to get you to hate that guy more, but the people would still boo. And Lane Kiffin has mastered that. Uh-huh. He knows how to do it.
Yeah.
I give him props. Yeah. And he can coach.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty good. I don't know.
I hate to admit it. But.
Well, that's our sports segment.
Right here on Sports Talk, John and Johnny.
That's
in the
what it is. Yeah. Yeah. We're Morning Zoo Radio. Yeah.
Let's go to our eye in the sky.
The eye in the sky with the Doppler. They have Doppler.
Do they have Doppler in the eye in the sky?
No, I don't know. I'm thinking of weather people. What is Doppler? It's the big thing that goes on the van, right?
It's the Doppler radar.
It spins and it
it's a weather radar.
Whirls around. It's a weather radar?
Weather radar, waggy.
John's been drinking. We apologize.
Sorry about that, guys.
So did I tell you this? I'm in Mexico. Not now, but when I was in Mexico, we have our little mini bar in our hotel where you can just get whatever out of the fridge. It's an all-inclusive resort. You know, we're making that kind of coin for exactly 6 days. And then we had to come running home and pay the bills. But no, so we're there, and there's like packs of M&Ms and a Snickers bar and whatever in the little drawer, the snack drawer.
Yeah.
But I noticed there's these warning labels, huge, like a black bar label on everything there, and it said excesivo calorias, and it had other few other phrases in Spanish. And so evidently, so I looked it up. I was like, what is going on? And sure enough, a million Google results for it, and it said basically that Mexican Congress or whatever their equivalent is passed this law because they have huge diabetes issues there, and obesity epidemic has really reached Mexico. And soda is a big problem there. So on every can of soda and on every candy bar, there's these huge black box warnings that say, this exceeds your calories for the day, percentage for what it is, and you shouldn't be eating this. And it almost covers the label of the brand. It almost, over the M&Ms, it was like, excesivo calorias.
Wow.
And I was like, this is a lot. And I was fascinated by it. So then I'm leaving, and I go to, which I sent you a text of this image. I want you to see it. So I go to buy some cigars for my buddy Taylor, who was watching our pups while we were gone. He's house sitting for me and watching the dogs. So he's there for 7 days for us. And I'm like, oh, this is great. I'm going to get him some cigars. So I go into the gift shop, and they got this box of, you know, whatever. And it's on your iMessage.
Didn't come.
It's not coming through? Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'll send it to you again. But anyway, so it has a huge black box warning on the cigars, which we're used to that. Surgeon General's warning, this can cause cancer, whatever. But it covers the label. It's an entire page of warnings. I'm going to send it to you again. And hang on, I'm sending, resending. I just want you to see this one image because it's craziness. Save. I'm sorry, John. This is bad quality.
This is...
Okay, so I'm just resending it. So on the thing, you got your little wood grain, faux wood grain, whatever cigars it is. And then on top of that, if you'll look, you'll see that there is a picture of a patient in a hospital bed getting oxygen.
That patient is intubated.
Yes. So when you go to buy cigars in Mexico, they present you with an image of a person with a breathing tube.
Yeah, like,
and they just go, they're daring you. They're like, you really want this?
That dude's basically in a coma, like his eyes are all gray and black.
Yeah, it's not good. And then the back page is like, it covers the entire label. It's black and yellow writing, and it says advertencia, and it's a whole thing, too. It's a big, you know, warning. It's got this whole thing. It said something about COVID-19 in there, too. So I think they're saying, like, this can exacerbate your, you know, if you get the virus and you're smoking, you're a smoker, then you're going to have a harder time with it. But I was like, they're going all out.
Yeah.
To try to, like, and I don't know how I feel about it. That's the whole thing of, how do you feel about government involvement in your everyday life? Should they intervene if there's a public health crisis? Should they just, like when they tried to get healthier snacks in schools, people in the South freaked out because they were like, we should have the choice. If my kid wants Cheetos, they should be able to go get Cheetos. You shouldn't take the Cheetos out and put in an apple and make them get an apple.
Yeah.
So I don't know where I stand on that. Like,
it's interesting.
It's a strange thing.
Yeah, it's one of those, it's almost like the government's role in that respect is kind of like, because you have a free society and free market capitalism, they're almost making a statement against misinformation. Hear me out on that.
Yeah.
Because advertising that is coming at you unfiltered, unbridled, over and over and over again, the impressions,
right,
they do cause people to make detrimental decisions to their health.
Yeah.
And not consider any of the consequences, because those consequences are not being revealed in that ad.
Right. They're selling you on the party atmosphere when they're selling you beer. They're not selling you on being hung over the next day.
Right.
They're selling you on the nightlife or whatever it is.
And so like to say, hey, there's enough of a societal negative result from this particular thing that we have the data for, that now we feel, you know, that we have to at least balance the information with something different. I mean, this Surgeon General's warnings. I mean, they
voted it in. I mean, I don't know.
It's interesting.
But it is. Yeah.
I mean, they're not preventing it from, I don't know, to put the picture of the guy on there.
That's intense, man.
But I mean, that really is what happens to you when you smoke for a lot of, I mean, I don't know. That's a hard.
Yeah.
To make it anything government mandated, obviously, I think has to be thought through.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the role of government and government regulation. But, I mean, whether that's regulating or not, I don't know.
Well, yeah. I know you've been reading a book about, like, fascism and how there's, like, a slippery slope to fascism when you start letting people enter your culture that have elected office, that they're saying what you want to hear, which is, first of all, you said they create the myth of the past, this great, glorious past. They create that myth. And then they go, now there's outsiders that are trying to take that away from us. They get you to celebrate that. And then they can almost push through whatever legislation they want, because they go, if we don't push this through, these outsiders, these vandals, and these invaders are going to get us and take away our mythological past, this great, whatever it was, Make America Great Again, whatever it was. And that's how it works. That's how you get fascism to work. It's how Hitler did it. It's how a bunch of people did it. And so I'm interested to see what happens and how what our tolerance level for that is as a culture, because nobody thinks it's going to happen. You know, I'm not a conspiracy theory guy as a rule, but there's been a couple of things happen, and I brought this into you today because I knew that you didn't know all about it. But somebody sent me a TikTok video, and I won't play the video. I think it's got some language in it, but basically, it's a person who lives in another state, and they're talking about Tennessee's new license plates.
Yeah.
And Tennessee has a choice that I don't know how they voted it all in, but they have a license plate option this year. It's a new, like, blue plate. So they've changed plates. You can't just renew your tag and get a sticker now. You got to get this new plate. But you get a choice of the plate. One has the little Tennessee star and three stars in a circle, but it's above the curve of it. It says, "In God We Trust." And one of them, you can opt to not get that.
Yeah.
So when you order them online or whatever, you can go to the front desk and, hey, I want this. Would you like the whatever? And they ask you, because I went. And I knew it was coming because I'd seen that video. But the way that the tags are presented, and this is what this person was calling attention to, was you get a different order of letters and numbers if you chose "In God We Trust" or if you didn't.
Yeah.
And I was like, that can't be right.
Right. So if you have one, it's like three letters and three numbers. If you do the other, it's three numbers and three letters.
Yeah.
Yeah, it reverses.
So I was like, well, this can't be true.
That's true. Yeah,
I read up on it. And so I looked it up, and it's true.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is kind of one of those things where maybe there's a reason. So I think you looked it up before the show started, and they made some excuse of it. It's like there's a mathematical reason.
Right, is to keep them from the two. They're basically treating them as two different kinds of plates.
Yeah, and they don't want there to be a redundant,
redundancy between the two.
Except for this person did the math in their TikTok video and said that can't be the reason, because there's like 116 million possibilities with letters or numbers first. There's like that many, and we have 6 million drivers or whatever in Tennessee, so that can't be it. So, and listen, I'm not saying they're trying to divide us up into who's a Christian nationalist or not or whatever, but I'm saying they're opening the door for that to happen. Let me give you a scenario. And I'm not saying this is happening. The only reason I think about it is there was already posts about this where people were saying, I'm so glad to see some of these letters first people who really love the Lord. Like, they were already like giving you credit. In other words, they're summing you up by just looking and seeing a letter first on the thing. They don't even look for the, because it's tiny writing. But they can see whether or not you're an In God We Trust person just by looking at your license plate. And I was like, that could lead to some strange stuff. If you've got, like, let's say you got a really crazy cop who's a, you know, he's decided that he's going to, we all know it's cop, there's good cops and bad cops, and they could whatever. Are you more likely to get a warning?
Yeah.
If you've got a, if he's a, if he falls on one side of the aisle and he's like, all right, well, this guy's clearly getting a warning, or he's not.
Well, the flip side is someone who thinks that anyone who's religious is ridiculous.
Right, they're bigoted against religion.
Right, so then they
could decide, I'm just going to, you know.
Yeah, you didn't even opt to have in God.
It's just a weird thing to put everybody in those bags. And plus, you're basing it on a thing that's not even really like, it doesn't say that I'm a Christian. It just says, I want my Christianity and my state license plate to be mingled together in some way. So it doesn't, so it's like, talk about virtue signaling. To me, it's like a strange thing.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Yeah, it's very...
And I'm sure there's people listening that's going to be like, well, you're overreacting, you're whatever. I'm just saying, like, we're opening the door to some strange things to happen when you boil people down by whether they put a few words on a license plate or not.
Yeah, it was not even adopted into, like, our money until the 1950s.
Yeah, it's just like the pledge. People make such a big deal about the pledge, but the pledge was like the 50s, right?
Yeah, it was post-World War II.
People act like it was Thomas Jefferson wrote the pledge and made everybody do it in school, and we just been doing it for 200 years, but it's not true.
That's what's hard about trying to boil something down. I was reading a book, and it was talking about, C.S. Lewis talked about this a lot, reductionism, and how, and this author, it was Philip Yancey, he was talking about how that's what we've done now. It's so easy to reduce things down in order to find to try to evaluate exactly to fully define it and then evaluate its value or devaluation, and that's the hard part. Having, you know, what are the implications? It's the same thing with any sort of Christian apparel, Christian books, any of those kinds of things. Like having something on my car, my license plate, a bumper sticker, or whatever. I think it's, I have nothing against an expression of faith, obviously. I'm a man of faith who makes expressions of faith every day. It's like you said, when it's put there so that I can try to somehow tribalize the process.
I want to make sure everybody knows I'm separate from you.
Right. Or that I think that it is a statement bigger than the life that I'm living already. I think that's the big thing about this whole statement of faith issue for me is you're already making one. You don't need, look, if you choose a license plate or not choose one, that's fine. But oddly enough, in my house, I think one of my cars has it and one of my cars doesn't.
Well, and, John, let's wait and see what happens. Let's see which one of those cars makes it to heaven.
Well, again, I would say let's see who gets pulled over, but
oh, it'd be great. You could do a little A/B test.
It's going to be me.
That's true.
But it'll be for good reason.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, this idea, like, guys, I'm already making a lot of statements by the way, even that I think. There may not be statements even that are known to the people around me. But, like, the mystery of the universe, and he talks about this, is so interesting when you talk about suffering. C.S. Lewis says in his experience, like, what we consider to be miraculous things or these, like, very evidential interventions of God in a person's life. He, when he was around people in his day, he witnessed them happening to younger people or people who weren't yet people of faith to help bring them to faith. Like, undeniable and you know, this author Yancey's talking about again, you know, the cloud in the sky, the pillar of fire, the, you know, fire out of heaven, right. Those kinds of things. Like it, in C.S. Lewis's experience, that happened to younger people, or people, or young people of faith, or people who were coming to faith.
Yeah.
But in his experience, as they got older, there was a different kind of faith that was tested. It wasn't like the one I'm going to believe for the fire to come down.
Mm-hmm.
It's what Yancey calls fidelity. And that's sort of the Job story. And if you go, it's the Moses story. It's Abraham. It's, hey, for a long time, he's believing for Isaac to show up.
Yeah.
I need this thing to happen. And when it finally happens, there's the big miracle.
Right.
The fidelity is the call to sacrifice him. The fidelity is mm-hmm. when I don't show up in the way that you thought I would,
right.
or you think I'm being silent, or you think I'm being aloof, or you
right.
think I am not coming to your rescue.
Right, Babylonian rule for 400 years.
Right. Yeah. I'm not showing up in the way that maybe I once did.
Uh-huh.
Now I'm not just the slot machine God here. Will you still trust me? And which it's very unfair, and he asked that question, is God unfair? That's what it feels like to us, is unfairness or God being aloof. And he makes the statement, or makes the case, like, we don't really know how God defines faith.
Mm-hmm.
We really don't know what all he takes from it. That's not revealed to us as of yet. But we know that whatever it is, it accomplishes a purpose that God has for the unseen realm. Because he talks about when the whole Job story, however you want to play out the wager between Satan and God and all those things, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The point that he makes, that we can at least extrapolate from this, is that there is an unseen world with a lot of things going, and that the faith of Job made a statement about the character of God into the unseen realm for other creatures, other parts of creation, and is a part of God's plan. It actually serves a purpose, which it's hard for us when you're the one suffering to go, wow, I hope this serves a purpose. But that God, there's something God takes from that.
Yeah.
And so for me, like, the statements of faith are not about just what tribe I can get into to say, hey, sign me up for this. Like,
right.
I think I'm making it, by the way, even when I wrestle with God,
uh-huh.
which I was telling the staff this morning, and I forgot this. I read some stuff on vacation. Like, that's what the name Israel means. That's why he changed Jacob's name. It means wrestling with God, or the one who wrestles with God. So when you wrestle with God, that's a part of the
right.
journey with him. And that is a statement of faith, how you choose to do that. Did we tell the story? We did, didn't we?
I don't know.
That, surely we did.
About you wrestling with God?
Talking about my wrestling with God a little bit in a message, and a person in our church, and a person who was a visitor that day. Surely I told this story.
I don't know.
Saying that they didn't think I was saved.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We told that, yeah.
You know, that's the point. Like, I'm making an extreme statement of faith. I am wrestling. I am struggling.
Mm-hmm.
I am still choosing to trust. I'm bringing my problems to God, trusting he's big enough for them, that my doubts don't negate his love for me.
Right.
But he'll meet me there. And I don't know where he is or what he's doing all the time, but I'm still choosing to stay here in the hardship. That's the statement of faith I think we need to be making. Whether or not my license plate says it or not, I think is not a direct connection to me.
Hey, man, Lord, I believe. Please help me believe.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where the rubber meets the road for a lot of people. And I don't know. I was telling Dane this today. I really feel like there was a moment for me when I came back to faith in my mid-20s, and you were a part of that journey. Like, I was really pensive, but then I got so excited because I was seeing God do things, and I was seeing this bond among Christians of, like, I love Jesus, you love Jesus, let's go change the world, let's let his love change the world. And maybe that's just some naive thing that I was feeling at the time, but it felt so real to me, and it really drew me back. And now I just feel like over the last 10 years, or maybe even 5 or 6 years, it just feels like I see a lot of, like, instead of that, I see Christianity as being like, hey, we hate the same people, right?
Yeah.
And it bothers me so much to see, like, but there's a brotherhood and a bond being forged from that.
Sure,
like,
there is.
Joy is in that almost, because it's like, we're holding the line against these invaders, right? We both hate. We're both doing this crazy thing to own the other people that we think are our enemies or whatever, right? And you just, they're waiting for this nod from you that you're with them. And I'm like, that's not what this should be. To me, that's not what this should be about. And I'm not saying that's a very broad brush I'm painting, but I really see some of that. It bothers me so much when I see this invader mindset, you know, pervading Christianity, which should be about something else. It should be a higher calling, like you said, about fidelity.
That's very interesting. If you have enemies, the most Christ-like thing you can do is love them,
mm-hmm.
forgive them. And it's not open to debate.
Yeah.
It is what sets Christianity apart from everything else. It's the really...
Yeah.
The definitive part of Jesus.
There's a guy I follow on Twitter who is writing a book. He wrote a book about loving your enemies. And now he's taking it around to churches and speaking about it. And he's being met with this new brand of Christianity that I'm telling you about, which I'm putting in quotes, Christianity. But it's such a hard concept for people that he's dealing with it. And he was talking about some of his findings. And I sent it to you. Did you see the thing I sent you the other day? He said, on my tiny speaking tour, I often heard two reactions to the work of enemy love. Conservatives, feels like you're asking us to compromise our morality. Mm-hmm. That's what conservatives say. You're asking me to love my enemy is to compromise morality. Progressive Christians say, it feels like you're asking us to be complicit with injustice. So you have people on the left or yep. within Christendom, and they're saying, yeah, but there's all this injustice going on. If I give an inch, yeah. I'm letting injustice happen. And he said, compromise/complicity seems to be where we're stuck. And then this person responded, which I thought his response was apt too. He's another minister. He said, it seems to me that conservatives are like, if I don't call out moral evil, I'm endorsing it. And progressives are saying, if I don't call out social injustice, I'm endorsing it. We're both afraid of endorsing evil. So at least that's the common ground.
Yeah, wow.
And he said, they seem to be confused on with it, the sticking point is what you deem to be evil,
mm-hmm.
or what you prioritize as being most evil. Is injustice more evil, or is compromising and giving into immorality the most evil? And where you fall there is where we just choose our tribe. And we say the other people are putting their head in the sand and they're being complicit or compromising. And I never heard anybody put it quite that way. And, you know, I think we're getting closer to being, it's another conversation I was having today, is like when we're able to get around people, you can find a common ground.
Yeah.
It's more likely, you're not going to have a knockdown, drag out argument necessarily based on some thing that you might type 100 words in a tweet about. But when we're stuck in our houses for those many months, I think that villainy, that cartoonic caricaturization
yeah.
of the other side
yeah.
was able to take hold. And yeah. now we're trying to come out of that fog and go, all right, we got to live with each other.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to boil you down to like two beliefs. I got to live with you. So now tell me why you believe this. And I'm more likely to sit down. If I sit across the table from somebody and have a, I think that's one of the reasons Jesus said we should eat meals together.
Absolutely.
It creates that you can't just, I'm breaking bread with you. There's already, I'm giving you something of me.
Yep.
It's harder to have that villainification of somebody.
Yesterday, I went to meet with our Afghan friends who are refugees who came here. And it was sort of the ending of part of our commitment to them.
Yeah.
And we're meeting with the people from the organization, the agency, and I'm not allowed to use their names, but the wife, I didn't realize this, had made a full scale Afghani meal. I mean, talking like three different proteins. I mean, like the whole deal,
yeah.
all homemade. And sitting with people that I don't share a religion with.
Yeah.
And that, quite honestly, a lot of my life, especially, you know, since we're the generation of dealing with the aftermath of September 11th and,
mm-hmm.
and the war on terror and all those things.
Right.
There's so many things that I would be scared of.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying those fears are ungrounded and that there's not someone out there that looks like them or someone out there that looks like me that isn't a danger to both sides. But there is a beauty around the table
mm-hmm.
of just, man, I mean, just the serving of it. It was so amazing to get to partake of their culture,
yeah,
in their home, in a place where we had, you know, they were helping me and I've been helping them. And like you said, you can't, I think Brene Brown says that, it's hard to hate up close.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got to lean in. Like, if you're not leaning in with people, and I think you're right about the pandemic taking us to a place where we were leaning out.
It's just easier to do. You just go, well, and obviously we both believe that, like, social media, Twitter, and it emboldened a lot of people to make hate speech okay. They felt like they were protected. They said things they wouldn't say in person. And now you're seeing it bleed into the public square where they were like, no, this is how I really feel. And I'm going to do X, Y, Z in person too. I'm going to get a tiki torch and I'm going to go to Charlottesville, whatever it was, whatever that thing looks like. But I also think that's not the majority of America. It's just not. And it's so easy to sit back and be like, everybody's going crazy. And no, we're not.
Right. What you're seeing online is not a representation.
Right.
I mean, there's news stations and news, and we talk about it. You know, Ad Fontes Media is an amazing source, their media bias chart.
Yeah.
Interactive media bias chart. I encourage you guys, Ad Fontes Media. It will tell you minute to minute off of every story of every single right, left, and center news story out there,
mm-hmm,
where it lights so that you can kind of see, oh, okay, this feels like reality. And maybe it is, but it does have this level of right or left bias to it.
Yeah.
And maybe you want that, but at least be aware of it. Or All Sides, yeah, Media is another one. You can get an email every day where they tell you, hey, here are the news stories from yesterday.
Right.
Here's what the right left, here's what the left said, and here's what the middle was. And we can, you know, extract from there. I mean, I just think it's important to know,
right,
what you're seeing and reading. It becomes reality to you over time.
Yeah.
It is not. I say it all the time in my house, and it's good for me. Like, what's going on in my head is not the reality of the world.
Yeah.
I have to interact with them, and then it could be that I was right, could be that I'm wrong,
yeah,
but it won't encapsulate it all. It can't hold it as it is.
Well, it's like, remember the old story, the anecdotal story about War of the Worlds, when they did War of the Worlds on the radio,
yeah,
and people thought it was real and they were under alien attack.
Yeah.
And they said people were jumping out windows. I mean, I don't know how – there's anecdotal stories of what happened, how much alarm there was.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, fast forward to now, the news has to be alarmist to get clicks and to sell ad space.
Yeah.
So we have rewarded alarmism.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have an alarmist culture. We have people who overreact. You know, that's the thing in sports. To go back to sports with the Vols, like, there's an overreaction that happens every time – there's a loss, or if you have a couple of wins, this could be our year.
Right.
We're overreacting. We've only won two games, or we got to fire this coach. We're overreacting, but we reward overreaction in our culture now to the point where it's become a product. The news is a product now, and only when people will decide to be balanced will the news become balanced. When we stay unbalanced, we're rewarding that thing that's hurting us,
right? Which means you're going to have to call something out at some point.
Yeah,
and there's a way to do that.
Well, we do it with our dollars, too. We just go, we're not going to support this anymore.
Right.
The candidate that's mudslinging is not going to be able to win this race anymore. Or whatever we decide. When we put our foot down, when we stop saying it's okay.
Dude, I was in Florida. I'm telling you, man, some of the political ads that came up, I mean, they were as vicious as I have ever seen. I mean, just literal, this person hates America, wants to kill your children. Like, I mean, it was going, I mean, I'm summing up what the sentiments were for real. And even driving to school to take Sadie, there's a billboard, you know, vote this party, save America.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm sure both parties are doing that. I go, you have to manufacture some level of crisis.
Yeah. And say, I'm the solution to that crisis.
Right. I'm not saying there's not crises,
right,
but actually the beauty of America has always been, the beauty of democracy in general, is that two sides who see things in two completely different ways have to come together and compromise.
Right, because they both still love America.
I will just say this. If you haven't read Governor Haslam, so I wrote for his dad, Jim Haslam. Governor Haslam was a two-term Republican governor of Tennessee. And he had a book out that was called Faithful Presence.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells a story in that book about they had passed some law in Tennessee, and he didn't specify, I think, which network, but I know which one it was. They were interviewing him, and the law the issue had a lot of hot button
right
sort of smoke around it. Mm-hmm. They're like, well, tell me, I mean, how did you defeat the liberals on this and this and that? And Governor Haslam said, well, actually, both sides, we all just kind of came to the table. And
right. We each gave something.
We each gave up something and hurt each other's side. And the guy was like, yeah, yeah, but when they, I mean, when they fought against it,
right.
like they kept trying to make it something outrageous, mm-hmm. literally outrage, made yeah. of outrage. And like three or four times the governor said, actually, this is how we get stuff done in Tennessee. Like we just listen to each other and we just kind of,
yeah.
you know, compromised. They shut down the interview.
Right.
Okay, well, we're back to you, Bob. Like,
right.
they didn't know what to do. And yeah. regardless of whether I'm not endorsing every policy, I'm saying, like, there's something wise
yeah.
in anybody who leads, whether they're Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, anyone who leads that recognizes that, hey, the way this thing has always worked, you know, is when, you know, Hamilton and Jefferson had to work together.
Yeah.
Washington made them. Like, that's the only way it would work. They could not see the world any more differently.
Yeah, can you imagine if the losing candidate had to be the vice president, like in the old days? Oh, man.
It's unbelievable.
Some high drama there
would
ensue because you talk trash and then you got to be like, come on, I'll see you at work. It's like what happened with us, John. That's why we worked together.
That's how we got here. Yeah.
I won. You lost.
I was going to say I won. The other guy, I don't know what happened to him. But
we're all winners, Sean.
Listener, we hope that you feel like a winner because you got to listen to the podcast today and it means a lot to us. And if you like what you've heard, even if you didn't,
yeah.
maybe we're going to say something that we're
maybe we didn't have a great
that.
Show, but you want to go back and listen to old episodes, talkaboutthatpodcast.com. That's where you find those.
Oh.
And we'd love it if you did that. Check out our link trees and all that stuff. That's where you can find all of our social media links and yeah. all of our new projects that are coming out. We'd appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Follow Johnny. Follow me. Link tree is the best place to do that to see everything. It means a lot to us when you do it. Thanks to all of our patrons on Patreon. I just made a new word. Yeah. We just made a whole new website. Exciting things are happening on the podcast. We'll be announcing probably about mid-November. There's something absolutely now that's solidified that's coming, and we'll share with you guys very exciting new partnerships. So very, very cool stuff. We appreciate you joining us every week, and we hope you do it again next week on
Talk About That.
Hi, I'm Beckett Cook, host of The Beckett Cook Show. I lived as a gay man in Hollywood for many, many years until I had a radical encounter with Jesus 13 years ago. Since then, I've gotten my master's degree in seminary and published a book called A Change of Affection. On my podcast, The Beckett Cook Show, I sit down with fascinating Christian scholars and thinkers to address the lies of the culture and bring the biblical truth to bear on those lies. To start listening now, go to lifeaudio.com or search for The Beckett Cook Show on your favorite podcasting platform.